This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Prince Charles has warned the current financial crisis is nothing compared to the impact of global warming. Speaking in Brazil, the heir to the throne said climate change now calls into question humanity's continued survival on the planet.
Global warming. Global warming. Global warming. I am sick and tired of hearing about global warming.
Chinese passenger car sales in February jumped 33% from a year earlier.
I don't believe it. Over and over and over. I am going down.
But you can't stop developing the auto industry just because it influences the environment and tell everyone to go back to riding bicycles.
China surpassed the US as the world's largest auto market in January.
Don't take my word for it. Here are the shocking, sordid facts. And judge for yourselves.
In last week's Radio EcoShock show, we talked with Professor Michael T. Clare about the looming possibility of social instability or riots, even here in North America. Can't happen here? There was a riot in downtown Montreal, Canada on March 15th. The march to protest police brutality ended up with smashed storefronts, burned police cars, and over 200 arrests. Meanwhile, the European think tank called LEAP Europe 220 says America is likely to have outbreaks and riots due to a lack of a social safety net in these difficult times, plus the hundreds of millions of guns owned by its citizens. We could discount this as just another think tank ploy, but LEAP also predicted the subprime real estate meltdown in the United States a couple of years ago. This time, as Claire Gatinois reports on truth.org, quote, if your country or region is an area where firearms are in mass circulation, among big countries, only the United States is in that situation, LEAP indicates, quote, then the best way to deal with the dislocation is to leave your region if that's possible, end quote. In any event, some Americans will leave their region simply because of hurricanes, droughts, and recurring floods caused by climate change. In fact, that's already happening in the super dry West as well as in Florida and the Louisiana coast. The first American climate refugees are on their way. In this program, we'll catch the latest wave. We interview one of the few independent environmental journalists still standing, Stephen Leahy. You'll hear what author and activist Bill McKibben told a business audience in Indiana on March 11th, and a scorching hot speech by Oakland activist Van Jones at the recent PowerShift 09 conference in Washington, D.C. Right-wing radio nut Michael Savage calls Jones a thug. President Obama calls him special advisor on green jobs. I've got a lot of other audio goodies for you and baddies, another roundup of the horrible climate news, a laugh and a song here and there. It's Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. But hey, are you sick of hearing about climate change? Who isn't? Polls show millions of people can't stand to hear any more about it, like this radio funster Craig Mayhem. Mr. Mayhem doesn't like anything, as we'll find out in this classic one-minute rant.
Global warming. Global warming. Global warming. I am sick and tired of hearing about global warming from everybody. Not just people who are like, oh my God, we're all going to die. Global warming, we're all going to die. The fish are dying. The trees are dying. Everybody's dying. Your grandkids are going to burn up on the surface of the sun. But also people who say, every time it's cold out, oh, global warming, huh? Oh, look, it's cold outside. Oh, no, crap. It's wintertime. It's going to be cold. You son of a bitch. I'll punch you with a ball next time I hear that crap.
The planet is getting killed, he says, but he's fed up with the blather. Catch his other rants at www.superfunpatrol.net. Superfund Patrol is a source for radio comedy aimed at the college crowd, so little kiddies need not apply. British writer-slash-activist George Monbiot says it's time to ditch the label climate change anyway. After realizing the Intergovernmental Panel, which governments have been using as their authoritative source, completely underestimated the rapid impacts of climate, Monbiot says, quote, we have to stop calling it climate change, using climate change to describe events like this with their devastating implications for global food security, water supplies, and human settlements is like describing a foreign invasion as an unexpected visit, or bombs as unwanted deliveries. It's a ridiculously neutral term for the biggest potential catastrophe humankind has ever encountered. I think we should call it climate breakdown. Does anyone out there have a better idea? That's George Monbiot writing in the British newspaper The Guardian. Climate breakdown, or climate shift, whatever we call it, we're in for it. About 2,000 scientists went to Copenhagen last week to raise the public and the government awareness of the climate crisis. We now know and can prove with scientific measurements that the sea level rise predicted by the Intergovernmental Panel report in 2007 was totally underestimated. Once we add melting of ice and glaciers, as you've no doubt heard, sea level could go over 4 feet higher on average in just one human lifetime, that is, by the end of this century. This news comes as many cities are rediscovering their ocean fronts, switching from unsightly industry and docks to upscale plazas and homes for millionaires. All that looks like another unsustainable bubble as scientists announce sea level rises of 4 feet or more, as you've just heard. I got into this discussion with one of Australia's leading city planners, Dr. Peter Newman. He was in Vancouver with his new book, Resilient Cities, Responding to Peak Oil and Climate Change. Dr. Newman showed slides of imaginative ideas for redeveloping the shoreline of Sydney in Australia. But I wondered if all that would be underwater in our children's lifetimes.
Yeah. Many of the slides that I've seen of urban concentrated development that you've shown come to me pretty close to sea level, and I'm thinking with sea level rise, we may be investing in something that we're going to have to retreat from.
Yeah, we have quite strong planning laws that incorporate a 1.5 to 2 metre sea level rise in all development, and that we've had that in place for over a decade. It's not that hard to build that in. I don't see that as being something that is impossible to overcome. Engineers love those kind of problems because essentially, you know, you build seawalls and do what the Dutch did, you know, and they're 20 metres under. They say Bangladesh is going to disappear because it's going to be, you know, the sea level's rising and they're very close to it. But they've been dealing... They deal daily with 13-metre tides. That's on average, 13 metres. So add another metre to that. How do you manage it? They manage it with huge mud banks, which they build and constantly are rebuilding. Some of them break down in storms, but they're very clever at dealing with the sea. They've had hundreds of years of dealing with that. And they will go on doing that. I think we'll find ways of protecting our cities with seawalls if it comes to that. But I would hope that the 1.5 kind of metre rise is all that happens because we get on and fix it, fix the atmosphere.
That was Dr. Peter Newman, author of Resilient Cities, in a Q&A recorded by Alex Smith of Radio EcoShock in January 2009. You could download Peter Newman's complete speech as a free MP3. It's a good one. Get it. Look for our 2009 program archive and select the show for January 16th. I don't share his optimism about our ability to adapt. What if the economic crisis makes such super projects impossible to finance? What if governments are too in debt to build and maintain seawalls? Keep in mind that fossil fuels required for building mega projects are also running out as the century progresses. It seems more likely we will simply abandon flooded parts of the cities as the sea levels rise more than expected, aided by stronger storms. That is the conclusion drawn by California's Climate Action Team in a report released in early March 2009 and reported by the Los Angeles Times on March 12th. The Times writes, "Report recommends phased abandonment of coastal areas and moving state infrastructure inland." End quote. Billions of dollars of infrastructure, from America's busiest port to freeways and office buildings, may have to be abandoned if the sea rises just 55 inches by the end of the century. Another report by the Pacific Institute in Oakland predicted 100,000 residents would be directly affected, from well-known neighborhoods like Marina del Rey and Venice, California. The airports in San Francisco and Oakland would go underwater. The Climate Action Team suggested about 1,100 miles of seawalls and levees costing $14 billion. They also questioned whether the state should support any further development along the coast and call for new construction to go further inland. Meanwhile, some of the poorest residents of the state and some of the wealthiest can expect damaging floods and storms due to sea level rise. The Copenhagen scientists also warned that just 2 degrees of warming in the Arctic could start melting the permafrost, the frozen soil and plant matter that could release a storm of new carbon dioxide and methane into our atmosphere. It seems like that is inevitable. Science also projects that 4 degrees of warming would wipe out the Amazon rainforests, adding yet another massive dose of CO2 into the sky. George Monbiot suggests it is time to feel, quote, sheer animal panic. You may not be able to sweat about it, though. Yale climate expert Stephen Sherwood said that summer in parts of India, China, and even the eastern U.S. could get too hot for sweating. Since that is how humans cool off, these regions would become uninhabitable, Sherwood says. That happens if the Earth warms 7 degrees over pre-industrial levels. Sherwood told Britain's Guardian newspaper, quote, "There will be some places on Earth where it will be simply impossible to lose heat. This is quite imaginable if we continue burning fossil fuels. I don't see any reason why we wouldn't end up there," a quote from Stephen Sherwood. The key message of the concluding communication from the Copenhagen Climate Science Congress held March 11th and 12th, here it is, quote, "Recent observations confirmed that, given high rates of observed emissions, the worst-case IPCC scenario trajectories, or even worse, are being realized. For many key parameters, the climate system is already moving beyond the patterns of natural variability within which our society and economy have developed and thrived. These parameters include global mean surface temperatures, sea level rise, ocean and ice sheet dynamics, ocean acidification, and extreme climatic events. There is a significant risk that many of the trends will accelerate, leading to an increasing risk of abrupt or irreversible climate shifts." Well, you can't get much clearer than that. You can understand why weak minds flip into utter denial. Who wants to believe this striking change is upon us? Unless we give up fossil fuels. It's the same mechanism where nicotine addicts light up a smoke as soon as they are out of the hospital after a lung transplant. We continue doing a lot of things that we know are killing us. Plus, every day we stall, there's all that good motoring and all that good money to be made. If you were a 12-year-old heading into the net for information on global warming, of course you would expect to find good information, moving information on our climate challenge and what to do about it. Not. The net, and especially YouTube, is crammed with a chorus of denialists. There are think tanks and hidden paid agents who make sure new denial rants are posted every single day. There are denial cranks who seem to post a link to their denial heroes every minute or two. Soon you end up with Texas talk show host Alex Jones explaining global warming is a vicious plot by the world bankers to take over your freedom. The new collapse of these same banks doesn't seem to slow down the paranoid. Neither does mere science or publicly available facts like the melting Arctic Sea. With your permission, I'm going to spend a couple of short minutes to dive deep into the twisted reasoning of climate deniers. I won't bother with this guy, the official CNN denier that went over to Fox.
You are the secret. You're the answer. I'm sorry. I just love my country, and I fear for it. And it seems like the voices of our leaders and special interests and the media, they're surrounding us. It sounds intimidating. But you know what? Pull away the curtain. You'll realize that there isn't anybody there. It's just a few people that are just pressing the buttons, and their voices are actually really weak.
No, we'll start with a clip from John Coleman, an aging meteorologist, longtime TV weatherman, and his claim to fame, founder of the Weather Network. The Weather Network has long since parted with Coleman and carries features on climate change. But Coleman is ready to battle the whole world with this horrible scam. Let's visit the brain of John Coleman.
Are you real concerned about this global warming?
I'm only concerned about the incredible frenzy and hype for something that's a total myth. That concerns me a lot because people are going hysterical about it. It's amazing to me. how upset so many people are, and how many billions of dollars apparently our governments are going to spend of our tax dollars to combat something that isn't real. That has my attention, believe me. As a scientist, I know that global warming doesn't really exist at all in any sense of significance, and that we have nothing to worry about.
Now, are you saying that there hasn't even been any warming?
There's absolutely natural climate fluctuations. We have little ice ages, we have warm-ups. Historically, the Earth has vacillated through all of these. Solar cycles change dramatically. Ocean currents change. And all of that has a significant impact on climate. And the building of cities, the flying of airplanes, the existence of all these billions of people on Earth have all influenced the climate of Earth. But none of it is of significance. And thank goodness, things are doing just fine.
So you're not in a panic over the icebergs melting and the sea levels rising? And
I promise you, 20 years from today, I'll be the one that's laughing. The icebergs, the ice caps at the poles are not going to melt. The oceans are not going to flood the coast. People are not going to die. We're not going to have global climate change that cuts off the food supply. We're not going to have thousands of species eliminated as they lose their habitat. None of these things is going to happen. The Earth is going to, the climate's going to change with cycles of the sun and with ocean currents, and we're all going to do just fine. So if you look at the history of the IPCC, it was formed by people whose agendas were of question. And they really wanted to get back at the industrialized nations and get them to pay penance to the third world nations for their pollution of the atmosphere through their industrial activities. It was the little guys picking on the big guys kind of concept, which is very common in the UN. And it was from people who had a world government in mind.
Isn't that what everyone wants to hear? It's all fine. Oh, and by the way, smoking is good for you, too. Coleman says he'll have the last laugh in 20 years. He'll be 95 then if he lasts that long without being hung by some angry crowds in the heat. As John Coleman, TV weatherman for KUSI San Diego, explains, all those climate scientists are actually trying to overthrow the power of the United States on behalf of the poor countries who covet our SUVs. And this guy gets tons of national TV time to spout what amounts to climate terrorism. Look, if I go on national TV and say that buildings are always blowing up for some reason or other, so it's okay if you do it, I'd have the terrorist police breaking down my door in the same day in an instant. But John Coleman can tell you that greenhouse gases, your own automobile exhaust, has nothing to do with climate change. If he succeeds in slowing down American action, yet again, he leaves a ruined planet for all coming generations. Isn't that climate terrorism? Isn't he an enabler for all the carbon addicts? British academics just met in Bristol March 7th and 8th to analyze the psychology of climate deniers, to look at the mental mechanisms that make people deny the obvious. In my experience, 99% of climate deniers are men. The majority are old men who can't accept their past has led to dangerous failure. They'll be dead soon anyway. And some of them have been paid hundreds of thousands of dollars by the fossil lobby. Others feel they have been gypped of some important position or somehow wronged by so-called liberals. The rest are much younger, acting out their rebellious phase, denying authority, and claiming attention for themselves. They may hope to become a new media figure or they post constantly everywhere. They never shut up. It gets much worse. Near the end of this program, I'll let talk show hate leader Michael Savage explain the green plot in more detail as he introduces our featured speaker, Van Jones. First, let's chat with an endangered species. He's a reporter for the Independent Press, publishing stories in media all over the world. Stephen Leahy does the legwork, goes to meetings, interviews scientists, reads the report, watching over our environment. He is an environmental journalist. He joins us from Canada. It's a galactic headline story. On a rare living planet, one invasive species seems to be killing off the others, even changing the sea and the sky. Who is covering it? Stephen Leahy, that's who. One of the few, Stephen Leahy has been an independent environmental journalist for the past 15 years. Stephen, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks, Alex. It's great to be here.
Well, once upon a time, Canada's biggest newspaper monopoly had one or two environmental reporters. They seem to have been let go, no doubt because they caused trouble for lucrative advertisers. You're one of the few green journalists left. Has it been tough?
Yeah, it's been very tough over the last few years in particular. As a result, I usually write for international publications, not for Canadian ones.
Well, that'd be like Independent Press Service is one of the ways you get your stories out?
That's right.
Well, it seems pretty strange to me. Like, every week there's a big environmental story. A scientist outlines proof that the trees are dying, or we discover about, you know, the end of the food fisheries. And then I find a five-line story in the back pages or nothing at all about it. Why aren't these stories hitting the front pages and the national TV news day after day?
That's a good question. I myself, of course, am very frustrated by the lack of coverage. Important environmental events and the latest science. I'm afraid that our media is more interested in focusing on politics, entertainment, and sports, and of course business, than it is on the realities of environmental degradation.
Really, we see two sections, or I do, on the you know, all about automobiles and the latest great big vehicles to buy, two whole sections devoted to that, and there is no environmental section.
No, exactly. It's very rare to see substantial environmental coverage by any paper. And in North America, the British do a little better job, and the Germans also do a very good job of providing science coverage and environmental coverage.
And we presume their publics are better informed.
I think they are.
Well, let's get to some of the news you've been covering lately. Where should we start?
Well, I've just finished writing a story about the impacts of ocean acidification. Now, that's where putting CO2 into the atmosphere from the burning of fossil fuels is slowly but inevitably turning the oceans more acidic. The oceans absorb about one-third of the CO2, the carbon dioxide, we've pumped into the atmosphere already, and they're 30% more acidic. So what does that mean? That means that it's changing the conditions under which marine species can live. Already, there's been evidence that shows that some important plankton species have shells that are much thinner than they used to be in the past. And some of these plankton species are an important part of what's called a carbon transport system in the ocean. So they are part of the way in which the oceans absorb carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So if that carbon transport system fails, there's going to be a lot more CO2 in the atmosphere, and we're going to be into catastrophic climate change very quickly.
Plus, we'll lose some of the basis of the food chain in the ocean, like zooplankton, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. These planktonic species, as well as all the other shell-forming species that are having trouble forming their shells because the oceans are more acidic, are key parts of the marine food chain. The implications for fisheries are enormous, and for other important habitat like corals. Corals also have to form shells, and the evidence is pointing to a complete absence of corals within 50 years.
What a tremendous loss for everything, the fisheries and all of that. Well, I want to move up back to land here. You've also covered the recent protest in Washington, D.C. about a coal plant, and one of NASA's top scientists, James Hansen, might have even put himself in a position of arrest there. That's so unusual. What's happening?
Scientists like James Hansen are becoming extremely worried that humans are not going to take the actions needed to reduce our emissions in time. They feel the urgency, and they are becoming desperate for action on the policy level. The scientists are prepared to put their own careers and even spend some time in jail to get the point across that we are in a crisis situation and we'd better start acting as if we are in a crisis situation.
Well, they can't really just sit back as observers as the world goes to hell. I mean, I'm glad to see this new scientific activism.
Yeah, I am as well. Many scientists have told me off the record for a number of years that things are far worse than they dared say in public or on the record. Now, just recently, I was at the AAAS meeting in Chicago. Now, the AAAS is the American Academy for the Advancement of Science. It's the largest scientific meeting in the world. And their plenary speaker was Al Gore. And Al Gore, who has, of course, learned all of his climate science from these scientists who were in attendance, his message to them was, you need to become active. Scientists around the world must become active in policy in order for us to take the kinds of actions we need to prevent catastrophic climate change. And if I may complete this thought, Alex, 1,500 gray-haired eminent scientists stood up and applauded loudly. That would not have happened 5 years ago.
Right. There's been a change in the perception of their role, and some activist scientists have headed over to Copenhagen just this week, I believe, in order to try and bring that message out even more.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an extremely important science meeting. I myself tried to get to that meeting, but I could not find any media outlet that would cover my travel expenses. I was even looking for donations at one point, because it is the most important science meeting this year and probably for the last 5 years. It is the most current information we have about the impacts of climate change. And some of the things that are coming out of this particular meeting, although it's not very well covered here in North America, I've noticed so far, are frankly terrifying.
And meanwhile, you know, when it comes to climate, people around here are saying, well, geez, it's been a cold winter this year. What happened to global warming? I've just heard a top British scientist tell the BBC on that question that most of the heat is going into the oceans. Now, if that's true, it'll take thousands of years, even hundreds of thousands of years, for that heat to be released, changing the climate. Have you heard much about ocean heating?
I've heard a little bit about it. It's certainly ocean heating is, you know, the oceans absorb energy from the sun, and it's a slow, gradual process. The oceans are already a little bit warmer, and they will continue to warm for quite a while. The impacts on the climate, of course, are also significant, because if the ocean changes its temperature, then it starts to behave differently, and that affects the overall climate.
Well, the currents start to change, and that could be a big fright for a lot of us. And you've covered, too, I don't want to say the demise of the food fisheries, but certainly big trouble for the food fisheries. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, the fisheries have been overfished for decades. Virtually every fishery on the face of the planet has been overfished. And that, you know, has been unsustainable for some decades now. But we're now adding in the impacts of climate change from acidification, so the food that fish feed on, the smaller creatures like plankton, are starting to be impacted. We're having warmer oceans and changing currents. All of these are having a major impact on fisheries. In fact, another large impact on oceans is pollution. The dead zones, such as in the Gulf of Mexico, have become larger, and there are more of them all around the world. And these dead zones are usually the result of nutrient runoff from our agricultural operations.
And we get these macro pictures of the oceans or the climate, but it also crystallizes down into individual species. And another of your stories that really caught my eye was about problems with salamanders.
Yes. Salamanders are kind of the hidden forest dwellers that very few people actually see, except for perhaps small children. Salamanders actually are a key part of any forest ecosystem, and some new studies are showing that salamanders in Central America are disappearing at an alarming rate. Many of them have gone extinct in just the last 20 years, and scientists are puzzled as to the reasons why. The suspected causes are a particular type of fungus and climate change. The conditions in Central America, like everywhere else, are changing. The climate is warmer than it used to be. Salamanders, like a lot of other species, are quite sensitive, especially in the tropical regions. They're quite sensitive to temperature changes. For after all, they evolved at a time when the temperatures in the tropics haven't changed hardly at all in tens of thousands of years. And now all of a sudden it's 2 degrees, 3 degrees warmer, and some of them just can't cope.
Hmm, just like the frogs in a way. We're talking with one of the few independent environmental journalists on the planet, Stephen Leahy. At your site, stephenleahy.net, you have a few e-books to help people out. Could you tell us about a couple of those?
Yeah, those are sort of my experimental attempts to compile some of the stories and add to some of the stories. I've got one book on the Alberta tar sands, and I have another one on hurricanes and climate change. These are very short, easy-to-read, 20-page kind of PDF files that people can download and get a quick overview of these particular subject areas.
And they're around $3 a piece at lulu.com, so that seems like quite a bargain for the information you've packed into them.
Well, I want to make the information accessible to people.
In the last Canadian election, you ran for the Green Party in a riding east of Toronto, which the voters included some General Motors workers. Why did you decide to try politics?
The reason I decided to run for office was that I was finding that many people here in my local community didn't know very much about the kinds of things that I have written about, because many of my stories are not picked up in any Canadian media. The second reason was I thought it was time for me to get involved in policymaking. We need policies that are going to reduce our emissions. And I thought that maybe by running for office, I could bring these issues to the fore. And the Green Party in particular is a party that is committed to trying to halt the environmental mess that we've got ourselves into.
Well, I think just like the scientists have to get active and journalists are going to have to get active and our listeners are going to have to get active if we want to turn this around. And I wanted to say, both you and I started trying to warn people about the state of the Earth back in the 1990s. Things have changed a lot since then, but I'm trying to fight off the feeling that the climate's already tipped, and I get discouraged when I read that Chinese coal use is just going to grow. It's unstoppable. A new story's out about that. Are we really doing something with environmental reporting, or have we kind of changed into chroniclers of the end times? What's your thinking on that?
Yeah, I have a similar ambivalent approach to that. Yeah, I think it's important for us to ring the warning bells and to document how we're pulling apart the web of life. At the same time, we need to also focus on solutions. What are the ways forward? What can be done to minimize the damage and to find new ways of living on the planet that are healthy and sustainable for all species? And I'm hoping to spend a lot more time on that in the next few years.
And I'd like to finish up with a double-barreled question about environmental journalism itself. First of all, can these stories continue to be heard through the deafening noise of the economic crisis? And second, how will you survive the death of newspapers, it looks like, and maybe even mass media generally? You want to take a shot at those two?
Yeah, the dominant story currently is the economics. And yet, of course, economics is just simply a subset of the environment. The economic crash that we're hearing so much about in the media is a temporary blip. But fortunately, the way out of the mess is also a way in which we can green our economies that will get us off the fossil fuels that got us into this mess in the first place. So the economic noise we're hearing is a problem, but only if we fail to use or fail to act to green our economies. If we just simply go back to doing the way things were, we're really in trouble then. So it's an opportunity for us to shift our societies off of fossil fuels so that we can produce more jobs, greener jobs.
Yeah, we can't go back to just opening up the malls for endless shopping and get the car dealerships all rolling again. We've definitely got to have a different vision. But will we hear about this with the problems that newspapers are having and the mass media layoffs?
I actually spoke to a bunch of journalism students last week in King's College in Halifax, and their question was, what future is there for us as journalists? And I told them that the traditional media are in trouble, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. There are other communications vehicles out there, the new media, online media, and there are new institutions, NGOs. Non-governmental organizations have a huge role to play in helping us reshape our society and help us wean ourselves off of these fossil fuel and consumption-oriented growth patterns that we've had these last 100 years.
Well, I think you're right. It will happen, but we're still going to need people like yourself on the ground to interview scientists, to go to conferences, and we're going to have to find out the way to pay for that and keep people like you going. And that's an important thing that the net community, if you will, and alternative thinking people are going to have to work out so that we don't end up in a vacuum where important news is just not passed on because nobody knows about it.
Well, that's a very good point. I mean, you mentioned the Copenhagen conference. I doubt there's any Canadian journalists attending that or covering for any Canadian media. I've often been at important science meeting when I was the only journalist there, and the only reason I was there is because I paid for it out of my own pocket. So, yes, there's going to have to be a shift in the way in which society gets its information, but it's also going to have to start paying for it, but not and not necessarily through any subscriptions, because they're not delivering the kind of information that people really need. People, I think, are going to have to adopt a pay-the-journalist model, in other words, a donation kind of model, so that, to support the kind of work that I am doing and that you are doing and that and many others are doing, so that we can provide this service of letting society, our larger society, know this is what's really happening.
Adopt a journalist today. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. We've been talking with Stephen Leahy, last name spelled L-E-A-H-Y, one of the few environmental journalists covering the whole world. Steve, you have an email notification of your news stories. Can anybody sign up for that?
Oh, absolutely.
How do they do it?
Simply by sending an email message to writersteve, all one word, at gmail.com, and just put sub in the subject line.
All right, writersteve at gmail.com and put sub in the subject line, and then you'll get tips of the news stories coming from Stephen Leahy. Well, thanks so much for your time and for your many years of hard work for Gaia. I really mean that.
Well, thanks, Alex. I appreciate your kind of work as well. It's probably the best environmental radio show on the planet.
Now I want to report on a new speech by author and activist Bill McKibben. On YouTube, you can find part of his presentation to the annual business conference of the Kelly School of Business on March 11, 2009. 20 years ago, Bill McKibben wrote the first book for non-scientists about climate change, titled The End of Nature. The sound quality on this video is too crappy for radio, but I want you to hear his important conclusions. I've transcribed that talk. You can find it on my blog entry for March 19th, and I want to read it to you now. That's what I do, passing on the latest news and views about what is really happening. Quoting Bill McKibben's latest speech, here we go. The real news that you may not be aware of is that in the last 2 or 3 years, that diagnosis has darkened and darkened considerably. The scientists that I have been speaking to for a quarter century, people who have been sober and concerned and worried, are all of a sudden panicked when one talks to them on the phone. And the reason is it becomes very clear that both the scale and the pace of global warming is happening much more quickly than we had anticipated. This is a grand, huge experiment. What happens when you pump a lot of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere? And so it is not surprising that there are surprises. It's too bad that all the surprises so far are on the bad side. Those feedback loops, and there are dozens of them, now are assuming a life of their own and pushing us very close to the point where no matter what we try to do about climate, we won't be able to do very much because it will no longer be in our control. The best science tells us we still have a brief window where closing down our output of fossil fuels may allow us to get this problem back under control, but it is a very narrow window, closing much more rapidly than we thought. And if we don't manage to hop through that window, the scale of impacts on the other side is enormous in ways that we're only now beginning to fully appreciate. Then Bill McKibben describes a cap and dividend program, which sounds very much like a transparent flow-through carbon tax, put in words more acceptable to Americans. There would be a limit on the amount of carbon that can be released, the cap. He prescribes a price for carbon to be paid by energy producers like ExxonMobil, who would pass that along to customers, so the price of gas might go back to $4 a gallon or whatever, and the money raised would not go to the oil companies or to Congress, but would be sent back as a dividend to every American. He then says, it's time limited. We have to reach a solution now, or it's no use reaching a solution. If we wait 5 or 10 or 15 years and put that much more carbon into the system, okay, then it will acquire a momentum of its own so great that nothing we can do in the out years will have any measurable effect on what happens in the Earth's physical systems. Bill McKibben goes on to point out that all other politics are negotiations between human beings, but the physics and chemistry of climate change are not negotiable. The processes are what they are. If you add gasoline to a fire, there will be a bigger fire. We cannot compromise with the atmosphere or with the oceans. Talk or negotiations are not possible. If we add greenhouse gases, the earth will warm, and many systems that civilization depends upon will destabilize and change beyond historic recognition. It is not a debate between conservatives or liberals, McKibben says, or even between the U.S. and China. This is between humans, who emit carbon, and the atmosphere, which reacts to greenhouse gases in ways predetermined by the physics and chemistry of the universe. Quote, it would be a great shame were we to leave it entirely to 18 and 19 and 20-year-olds to try and make this happen. This is a problem that all of us caused by a lifetime of living the ways that we've lived. And in any sensible universe, it's up to us to try and make deep, powerful, brave changes in the very short time that we have. That is how Bill McKibben ends the speech delivered March 11th. Find this transcript in the Radio EcoShock blog or watch the speech on YouTube. Adding to the chorus, just this past week, U.S. Senator John Kerry told Agence France-Presse that deferring action on climate change just because of the economic crisis would amount to, quote, a mutual suicide pact. AFP quotes Kerry saying, climate change is not governed by a recession. It's governed by scientific facts about what's happening to Earth, and you either accept the realities of the science or you don't. Well, here is someone who doesn't. Michael Savage is a popular radio talk show host syndicated across America. My listeners in Canada, Europe, Australia, or Asia will be shocked at the amount of hatred spewed out on the right-wing radio in the United States. Here, Mr. Savage, whose real name is Wiener, explains how President Obama is implementing Nazi-style fascism through green energy and controls on greenhouse gases.
Now, I want to tell you something else that you have to know. The fact of the matter is that Obama may be getting ready to organize his own personal army, not of brown shirts, but of green shirts. And that is why he has given this street thug, Van Jones, in my opinion, a street thug, a man who has specialized in harassing the police themselves, this all-important job. If Obama should appoint thousands or more than thousands of people to the environmental green czar to work for him, and then he deputizes them and then gives them guns and then gives them federal powers over that of the local police, you will know that we are repeating history in the United States of America. You see, there was another man in another country who rose to power on an army of street thugs. And he had a friend named Ernst Röhm, who headed up an organization called the SA. The SA was a political army which protected the Nazi Party leadership. It battled political opponents and terrorized the German people who opposed Hitler. Ernst Röhm was an avowed socialist. He rejected capitalism. He pushed for the nationalization of German industry and the redistribution of wealth. It seems that the Obama appointees actually have almost the same exact policies as the Nazi Party did. What you don't know is that the environment in this case is being used by the Obama administration in an attempt to gain control of the U.S. population. The brown shirts, as I said, under Hitler, were used to intimidate Germans who opposed Hitler. My fear is that Obama will be using the green shirts, these street agitators, in order to control the police and the people. Now, you're not able to talk about this because you don't know who I'm talking about, because the vermin in the media are covering up this very dangerous situation that is going on right in front of your nose. Instead, we'll talk about Madoff. If you wish, we can talk about the other thing as well. right here on the Savage Nation.
Mr. Savage is actually a portly PhD, a doctor who doesn't practice. He has told listeners that he sleeps in different places, always with a big gun ready in case of assassination. Actually a businessman in the health field, Mr. Weiner sold his brand of power drink to the Pepsi people. Big corporation sponsor Weiner's show because his rants, which remind me of a Nazi propaganda minister, Dr. Joseph Goebbels, draw an audience of a million or more. This green-hating, along with his hostility to homosexuals and Arabs, makes Michael Savage the number three talk spot on the radio in America. I can't believe what's happening in that sense. That is why the scientists in Copenhagen, that's what they're up against, all these scientists around the world, including at the American National Academy of Science. If the denialists win and the people turn to hatred, the world will be in flames in more ways than one. Fortunately, we have other voices, and lately these saner voices have won at the polls. Let us hear from Michael Savage's thug, Van Jones. Van Jones is an African-American activist from Oakland, California. He was early to say that the Green Movement needed to include people of color, that any big change in America would not work if it leaves the poor and the dispossessed behind. Hell, I'll let him tell you. Here is the conclusion of his speech to the PowerShift 09 conference just held in Washington, D.C., February 27th to March 2nd, 2009.
I'm going to tell you right now. We could have clean coal. I'm for clean coal. But I'll tell you what, if we're going to have clean coal, let's have a couple other things. We could have clean coal, or if we can, we could power the country with clean coal, or we could have unicorns pull our cars for us, you know, all day. We could have that too. Equally fictitious, equally fantastical, equally ludicrous, you know. So, you know, we could have the tooth fairy bring us our energy at night. I mean, equally ludicrous. There is no such thing as a tooth fairy. There is no such thing as unicorns. And there is no such thing as clean coal. So let's be clear about that. Let's be clear about that. But when we say that, let's say with equal force and equal passion, that our sisters and brothers who go into those coal mines every day, who risk their health, who risk their lungs, who are now being asked to blow up their grandmother's mountains and just scrape out the coal, they don't set the energy policy in this country. They suffer because of the energy policy in this country, and we stand with them, and we want them to have a better future, too. We want them to have a better future, too. They're a part of this movement. They're a part of this movement. We're not going to leave anybody out. When we talk about green for all, green for everybody, where was it written that only men could put up solar panels? Where was it written that only men could manufacture wind turbines? If the green economy has the same sorry track record of sexism, if women in the green economy are making 70 cents to the dollar, just like they're doing in the pollution-based economy, something's wrong with our movement. Something's wrong with our movement. We need to have gender equity in this movement. We mean green for everybody. And we need to be clear about that. The only part of the anatomy that should matter in the green economy is above the neck. Is above the neck. Let's get that clear. What about our Native American brothers and sisters? We had the beautiful brother up here, Clayton. Give Clayton a round of applause. He put it down. He put it down. They told us a long time ago that this was sacred land. And the sacrifice zones of the pollution-based economy have to become the sacred zones in the new clean and green economy. Those communities that were locked out of the pollution-based economy and pushed down by the pollution-based economy need to be lifted up in the clean and green economy. That needs to be a moral principle. And our Native American sisters and brothers who were pushed and bullied and mistreated and shoved into all the land we didn't want, where it was all hot and windy. Well, guess what? Renewable energy. Guess what? Solar industry. Guess what? Wind industry. They now own and control 80% of the renewable energy resources. No more broken treaties. No more broken treaties. Give them the wealth. Give them the wealth. Give them the dignity. Give them the respect that they deserve. No justice on stolen land. We owe them a debt. They were fine for you to suffer when it was hot. We'll let you be the solar power for this country and not just bring clean energy and that kind of power, but bring the moral power that community has been crying out to deliver to all of us. What about our immigrant sisters and brothers? What about our immigrant sisters and brothers? What about people who come here from all around the world who we're willing to have out in the fields with poison being sprayed on them, poison being sprayed on them because we have the wrong agricultural system, and then we're willing to poison them and poison the earth to put food on our table, but we don't want to give them rights, and we don't want to give them dignity, and we don't want to give them respect. We need to get down on our knees and thank these Native American communities, but also the Latino community, Asian community, and every other community that's willing to come here and help us out, because we obviously need some help. We need some wisdom from someplace else, because what we've come up with here don't make no sense at all. The green economy can't open its arms and welcome everybody. Something's wrong. And lastly, what about our sisters and brothers that are in prison right now? What about the formerly incarcerated? We need to have a green economy that doesn't have any throwaway species. We need to have a green economy that doesn't have any throwaway resources. We need a green economy that doesn't have any throwaway people either. No throwaway people. We can't have a green economy that's passionate about reclaiming thrown away stuff, but indifferent to reclaiming thrown away lives. We can't have a green movement that says we're going to do everything we can to give dead materials a second chance through recycling. Dead materials get a second chance through recycling. But if you've been to prison, we have no place for you in our economy. We won't give living people a second chance. That's not the green economy we need to build, sisters and brothers. We need to build a green economy. That reclaims people, too. That reclaims community. That's why you were born kind of strange. That's why you have all these funny feelings in yourself, because it takes a big heart. It takes a big heart to embrace the children of all species and people of all colors and say, I hold the vision for you. You may look different. You may be from someplace different. Our circumstances may be different. But I'm out here fighting for you. And I want to stand with you. And I want to work with you. And I want to listen to you. And it's the love in your heart that will give you that power. And the power that you have right here, with no guns, with no elective office, just right here. The love in your heart is stronger than a bomb. It's stronger than a bomb. It's stronger than a bully in office. It's stronger than a polluter. There's enough love in this room to save the whole world, sisters and brothers. If you don't let it down. If you don't let us down. And the reason I want you to hold on to your idealism is because this is the final chapter. In this century, based on what you do, the whole human family will declare what kind of species we are. Understand that. This is deeper than a solar panel. I want you to have a clean energy revolution. That's beautiful. But I'm going to tell you the truth about it. If you stop there, if all you do is have a clean energy revolution, you won't have done anything. And I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why. If all we do is take out the dirty power system, the dirty power generation in a system, and just replace it with some clean stuff. Put a solar panel on top of this system. But we don't deal with how we are consuming water. We don't deal with how we're treating our other sister and brother species. We don't deal with toxins. We don't deal with the way we treat each other. If that's not a part of this movement, let me tell you what you'll have. This is all you'll have. You'll have solar-powered bulldozers, solar-powered buzzsaws, and biofueled bombers, and we'll be fighting wars over lithium for the batteries instead of oil for the engines, and we'll still have a dead planet. This movement is deeper than a solar panel. Deeper than a solar panel. Don't stop there. Don't stop there. No, we're going to change the whole system. We're going to change the whole thing. We're not going to put a new battery in a broken system. We want a new system. We want a new system.
You've just heard Van Jones from the PowerShift 09 conference in Washington, D.C. Van Jones has been appointed as a special advisor to the president on green jobs. The media wanted to call him the green jobs czar, but Jones was quick to point out he would be more of a handyman. His mission is to facilitate the greening of many departments in the U.S. government so that all of them get moving not only on the carbonless economy, but on green jobs for those who need them most. That is a huge social program and a long-time dream of social justice. Of course, it isn't possible. In the same way that an African-American could never be elected president of the United States. Well, maybe we can. There is no way to toss up a few solar panels and hybrids and declare the consumer society green. It's going to take changes from everyone just to survive the economic crash, the energy slide, and the climate breakdown. We'll have to stop arresting young people and minorities for victimless crimes like pot. Yes, Van Jones, the millions of imprisoned Americans will need to be brought into the solution along with the Aboriginal people, everybody. Otherwise, the billionaires make their last stand behind the remains of the military and its blood in the streets until the heat waves solve the human problem by ending it. Massive change or massive death, and we may experience both, but I have hope we'll come out of this. Should we change our slogan to Yes, we must? Here is a word of hope from Peter Sinclair. Peter has a raft of good videos on YouTube answering the phony claims of climate deniers. The famous hockey stick debate, the medieval warming period, the urban heat island effect, all the myths those skeptics repeat over and over, demolished by Peter Sinclair's YouTube videos called Denial Crock of the Week. Seek them, and ye shall find. Peter says,
we're poised for a boom in the coming 5 or 6 years, despite what the economy looks like now. The next 5 to 7 years are going to be historic and formative for everybody. We will look back on this period like people look back on the 1960s or the Depression or the Civil War in terms of being absolutely a critical turning point. So now is a really great time for everybody to work really hard because the potential exists for massive, massive change. We're at that mark.
You can find lots of answers in our past Radio EcoShock shows. Our latest programs are downloaded 1,000 a week from the free website ecoshock.org. Even EcoShock shows from 2 years ago with experts on smog and global dimming and surviving after the lights go out, they get downloaded an average of 200 a month. Find out for yourself what top authors and scientists are saying. Load up your computer or iPod at ecoshock.org. It's advertising free and absolutely free to you. I'm your host, Alex Smith, as we travel through the whirlwind.
I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk.
Now don't forget, Saturday, March 28th at 8:30 p.m., that's Earth Hour. Turn off the electricity. About 100 U.S. cities, including Baltimore, Boston, Pittsburgh, Tucson, and many more, have signed up for Earth Hour this year. Another 1,500 cities around the world are going dark, including Berlin that just joined in. Major U.S. companies, grocery stores, sports teams, they've all signed on. Even the huge Coca-Cola sign in London's Piccadilly Circus will be shut off for only the third time since World War II. Find out more at www.earthhour.org. And get your city or company to sign up, won't you? Let the Earth see that we do care about the planet. Vote with your light switch. I'm Alex Smith. Thanks for listening.
This year, the world's first global election is taking place. an election between Earth and global warming. It's not about what country you're from, but what planet you're from. Your light switch is your vote. We're aiming for 1 billion votes for Earth, because our planet is worth saving. Vote Earth by simply switching off your lights for 1 hour and join the world for Earth Hour, Saturday, March 28th at 8:30 p.m.